Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hello.
Show's namesake, BJ Shea, is on assignment. He's probably prepping, playing a ton of board games. That's usually what it does. And running the boards is Joey Deez.
Hey.
Hi. On today's show, Joey, don't go far because we got to talk Halo because there's a new television series happening.
Okay.
We're going to talk Magic the Gathering with Kamigawa Neon Destiny.
I know about my destiny.
Ooh, and of course the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com. It's going to be... What? Sorry. It's going to have our blogs, podcasts, and more.
More?
Brain was buffering.
Yeah, I guess.
It took a minute. But you can also find us by searching for BJ Shea's Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the Odyssey app, Buffering.
If I can remember that, I'm going to use that. Brain was buffering. Don't worry.
I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. Just had a little bit. It's like even better than brain fart. It's just like buffering. And...
Yeah, because I'm like... It's right there. I could see it in my brain. It's just not there yet.
Well, you can take a break from your brain because Joe and I know we kind of freaked. I don't know if you freaked out about it, Joe, but we did mention to each other that we had seen the new trailer for the Paramount Plus Halo series. First off, having played Halo Infinite a lot, especially during the holiday break, it's available on Game Pass, which made it super easy to play. And I was blown away with it. Still love playing it. And then seeing the fact that they're making this series got me super excited. I don't know how you felt about it.
I was happy to see something more than letters, because that was the teaser trailer. They were like, hey, we're making a Halo series. See you guys in whenever. Yeah, I actually was very excited to see the trailer. I didn't catch it during the football game.
Neither did I. I had to watch it online, which it's available everywhere.
And mixed feelings. I don't know. It didn't hit me in the Halo nostalgia feeling that I wanted it to feel.
Okay.
But at the same time, the Covenant looked awesome. The light sword thing.
Yes, that's one of the one thing was like when it was slicing through the wall or the barrier or whatever they had. I'm like, all right, they at least they understand the mechanics of the Halo universe.
Yes, so I was like, the Halo parts look cool. The storyline, we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, at this point, we do see that Cortana is in it. Which is kind of interesting having played Halo Infinite because through all of the series, Cortana has been basically the AI at the side of Master Chief and really essentially there to control him. Obviously, that's going to kind of go a little haywire as we go along with it. And if it goes anything along the lines of the storyline of the games, it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've like, got 6 games now of story to go with?
There's a lot. There is definitely a lot at this point.
I was originally hoping that they would just stick with the main storyline from the first maybe 1 to 3-ish games, but it doesn't look like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that.
So we'll have to wait and see, but at least the budget's there. That looked good, and the fight scenes look like they'll be good.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, as I say, as a sci-fi fan, as much as I love to complain, I will watch pretty much anything in the space genre. You know, I'll start off at a 5.0 and then we'll work our way up or down.
And I saw this article on Comic Book Resources that say that the new Halo TV series will have something for everyone, according to the star Pablo Schreiber. Schreiber, who plays the role of the series stoic central hero Master Chief, reassured both viewers who have never picked up a controller and the diehard fans who have completed every game on Legendary that the show's cast and crew are working to ensure that everybody enjoys the upcoming Paramount Plus series. During the streaming service's presentation for the Television Critics Association, he said, "One of the biggest things we have to deal with is the difference in making a video game versus making a TV show, and we're very squarely in the Halo universe. It's a show for people who love the Halo universe, and it's a show for people who are just discovering the Halo universe." And I've said this, especially when we were talking about like the Wheel of Time series. It's hard to translate one thing from a medium to another medium and have it be exactly what everybody wants. Because especially when you go from a book to a series, there's a lot of internal dialogue. And when it comes down to video games, there's a lot of action scenes and usually just a little bit of story to kind of bridge to that. And you've got to figure out that right balance when it comes. And a lot of the times the video game movies just fall really flat when it comes down to all of it.
Yeah, and this is a tough one to do because Master Chief is on his own in a way for a lot of the game, meaning that the gameplay that you're going through, there's no players with you or characters with you. So they're going to try to fix that somehow. And they kind of show that in the trailer with him saving some people and him having other chiefs. I don't know if they're Master Chiefs, but they're chiefs.
They're Spartans.
Spartans.
Yeah. So they're all Spartans, and Master Chief is like the best. And, you know, as they even say, it's like augmented to be the best out there. And it's like, what happens when you can't control the biggest, your hero and the biggest weapon that you've got out there?
Yeah, and there's going to be some political / military problems, as you were pointing out, that seem like they're going to be pretty prevalent throughout the series. But I'm just hoping that's the subplot. I just want to see him blow things up and go through space. Just do that.
Well, you'll have to wait until March 24th when it does premiere on Paramount Plus. But me, myself, I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch either way.
Now, another thing I know that you're excited for, and it's been a while since I've gotten in deep into the Magic the Gathering worlds and or the different planes and such, and they kind of brought me back, but not in a way that I was expecting. They've been revisiting a lot of the older worlds, and even with Innistrad recently with the werewolves and vampire sets. It's that horror that I've really liked, and I really love those sets originally, the first, two times that I'd already visited it. One of the sets that a lot of people thought that they would have loved, but it turns out it really wasn't what they wanted, was Kamigawa, which was, that was a long time ago when we first visited that plane. And a lot of people kind of wanted a sort of like anime Japanese fun sort of like something that really didn't happen because they really got deep into the lore of the Asian cultures and went with things that people weren't really expecting. Stuff like Oni and the whole spirits and what's going on with that, the Kami and all of that. And people are like, well, I just want, anime chicks with bunny ears. And you're like, well, that's not what you're getting. But they decided to still not go with that, but went with the route that I was not expecting at all with Kamigawa Neon Destiny, where they went with the almost like traditional, like dystopian cyberpunk future fused with the spiritual beginnings that they had with Kamigawa.
Cyber ninjas.
Dude, cyber ninjas. Like, and they have just kind of kitchen sinked this one because they've been throwing a ton of things out there. They do have the original aspects of having the spirits and like old school dragons and all of these different things going on with that, but mixed with a technology that we haven't necessarily ever really seen in a Magic set. Maybe the closest would have been when we visited the Artificer's plane, which I can't even remember at this point in time the name of, but I really loved it because it was a little more steampunky than everything else. But with this one,
Kaladesh?
Good call, Kaladesh. With Kamigawa, they're going absolutely ape nuts with this.
This is a weird set, not gonna lie. It's awesome. Don't let me twist the word there, but it's like you said, like a kitchen sink of abilities in the sense that they've taken, equipment, Phyrexian mana and corruption, gone down the plane of, well, they've got this great technology, but they're also very spiritual, and now it's corrupted. Tamio's back. Jinkataxis is back.
Yeah, like, seriously, like, they brought the Phyrexians back, and you're like, wait, didn't Phyrexians have New Phyrexia? And the big thing with them was that they couldn't travel to different planes. Obviously, that is no longer a problem because they're here, and it looks like some of the planeswalkers might have had something to do with that.
Hey.
Maybe our good old villain Tezzeret.
He's back.
He's back. And you did mention Tamio, which is from this plane, and we'd never actually seen her on the plane, and now it's kind of terrible because, well, she is a Phyrexian vessel at this point in time.
She's the completed sage.
Yeah, she has been completed, and which just means she has been turned to the Phyrexian side, infected with the Phyrexian oil, and is now working for the bad guys. And I think this is absolutely the first planeswalker with Phyrexian mana in the cost.
Oh, yeah.
Which is always interesting in terms of just having, how do you balance something with Phyrexian mana? Because you can pay 2 life as opposed to the color or the colorless of that in order to cast it. But they actually did something really cool with that, because if you pay that mana, she comes in with two less loyalty counters, so she'll come out a little bit earlier at a little bit of a weaker state, and that's kind of good in terms of just tactical choices.
Yeah, it seems like a good change to what was an overpowered mechanic, you know, in the vortex of magic, which is you really can't pay life for mana costs, because when are you not going
to
do that?
Exactly, and it comes down to a lot of people are like, oh, but, you know, you want to have your life as high as possible. It's like, no, if you win at one life, a win's a win.
Yeah.
And so being able to pay a little bit of life to get something out quicker, it's the reason why, like, pros will use stuff like the lands that do teal damage to you when they come into play untapped, or if they'll pay for Phyrexian mana, because the quicker that you can win and get out there, I mean, then you just win.
Exactly.
And some of the other bigger things on this, you mentioned like equipment. There's equipment and enchantments, but they've brought them in an interesting way, because now we've got equipment creatures and enchantment creatures. And we've had enchantment creatures in the past, but we literally have artifact creatures that can attach to other creatures. But when they're not, they can also just be creatures on their own, like essentially like sentient swords.
Yeah, spirits inside of weapons, essentially, which is a great theme with the set so far. They're all very good from what I could tell.
That's what I've been looking. And usually we hit up mythicspoiler.com to see a lot of the listings of the things. And it's just like, wow. Like, I don't know in the recent years if they've been doing this sort of kitchen sink sort of aspect with a lot of these things. But, I mean, anything I feel that's popular, they're going to bring back in some sort of aspect. Sagas have been very cool because they're enchantments that will do things every turn as they're going around and then eventually go away. And those seem to be really good in terms of telling stories, which this seems very story-focused, and then also being able to do some powerful things over the course of a couple of turns as opposed to immediately good or immediately doing something.
And the fun twist on sagas in this set is that some of them turn into creatures.
Right? Like, I didn't even realize that. Like, just they're like, okay, well, people, and I think that's the big thing, especially like in a limited environment. You need to have a good balance of having creatures and then things for creatures. So the fact that they can be creatures, it helps because you're keeping your creature count high, which you need to defeat your opponent without really, with actually adding the bonus of having a little bit of a utility to it.
Yeah, the themes in this set are crazy deep. I mean, you have enchantments and artifacts, both creatures and non-creatures, and equipment, and they all matter for different color types and themes in those colors. So you're going to have artifacts matters. You're going to have artifacts in your graveyard that matter. You're going to have enchantments that matter. Enchantment creatures that matter. So, I mean, we're only 200-ish of the 300-something cards that are spoiled so far, and this set looks like it's going to be up there in terms of complexity, which, if you're a new player, don't worry. It's really not that bad, because a lot of the cards just read top to bottom. Very simple. And they're like, for instance, the equipment creatures are still just 1/1 creatures for two. And that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
And then if you want to, use them as equipment, you just read the next line. And that's it. It's they make it very simple, although there being a lot of text on the cards.
Exactly. And they're even bringing back some of the old favorites back in the day with the shrines as creatures, in addition to being shrines. And shrines basically work with other shrines. The more you have out, the more powerful the shrines all become. Some of the alternate land art is insanely beautiful.
There are, once again, a million different art styles for this set. There's like the crazy foils, there's the alternate arts, there's the special arts, and then there's the like neo-Japanese art or something
that. It's like some of this stuff for collectors and just fans of the genres themselves, you're gonna have just a hoot with all of this.
And I say this, if you're new and you don't know what these cards do and you're worried about playing wrong, or maybe you're not gonna get your triggers, just download MTG Arena. It's cheap, and you can it'll tell you everything that's happening on the screen and will not let you miss triggers.
Exactly, and that is a good way. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, obviously in the last couple of years haven't had a chance to go to their LGS. LGSs are opening back up again, so if you're kind of that sort of iffy on terms of wanting to go to them, if they do have pre-release events, I don't even know how those work anymore, but if they do have those are a good way to do it in person, because it's low level, everyone's trying to help out each other. But even if you're not comfortable doing that, MTG Arena is an amazing way to get into it. It's a low barrier of entry in terms of spending money. You can do as little or as much as you want. You can literally just play for free and get through with it.
And let me tell you, right now, It's $10. It's their quick starter pack. You can go the Thursday before those LGS pre-releases.
Oh, get a little prep in?
You can play one draft. You can play one sealed. Try it out. See how you like it. And if you like it, then you can go the next day to your LGS and you can play in person.
Right? Exactly. So plenty of ways to play the game. They've been able to really kind of branch out when it comes down to it. And MTG Arena doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. So that's a good way for you to get right into all of it. Now it is time for
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
All right, Vicky, what do you got for us?
Big news that came out last week.
Oh, okay.
We are getting a Spider-Man spin-off movie. Not Venom, not a,
Morbius.
No,
what are the other ones?
Completely new one.
Really?
Not a Spider-Gwen, but it is a lady.
Okay.
This is a character I had no idea about.
Okay.
It is Madame Web.
Who the hell's Madame Web?
I don't know, but I'm excited. So it's actually, I try not to judge people that were in these movies that were quote unquote bad, like a Twilight.
Mm-hmm.
This is Dakota Johnson, the 50 Shades of Grey gal.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well,
but
I mean,
she's done some other good stuff.
And the movie, I mean, yeah, being in that movie isn't necessarily her fault.
No.
I mean, she said yes to it.
Yeah,
but
technically.
Oh, fine. Whatever.
But that's why it's kind of like the whole, like, Twilight, Robert Pattinson, Batman thing. It's like we're trying not to judge them on these things. So if you recognize the name Dakota Johnson, probably from 50 Shades of Grey. She was also in Peanut Butter Falcon, which I hear was a really good movie. But it has been announced that she is going to be in one of Sony's newer films. Madame Web. I don't know. Like she, when I looked at pictures of Madame Web, she kind of has this Agatha, like if you remember Agatha from the comics, but not the witchy, she kind of has that vibe to her.
Like seriously, like an old woman. And here, okay, so I did find her powers and abilities. Just checking out Wiki. Madame Web is a mutant who possesses psychic sensory powers, including telepathy, clairvoyance, prescience, and the ability to sense the presence of psionic powers in others. She can also perform psychic surgery and appears to others in the spirit/astral form, and she has a gifted intellect. And
there was news last month that I missed that they were going to start production of Madame Web this year, but they hadn't announced any specifics, but they already had a location, but nothing really set up. So this is like the big first news coming from this whole thing. So they're probably going to start filming within the next few months. So according to comicbook.com, as originally described by comic books Kofi Outlaw when the movie was announced, the Cassandra Webb of the Marvel Comics source material is a mutant born in Salem, Oregon, which I'm hoping they do stuff in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've had a lot of New York. We've had, I think Cloak and Dagger, we had some New Orleans, which I was really digging. We had some mm-hmm. California, I think, with Runaways. So I would love to see more West Coast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it's funny because Peacemaker, which we talked about on Friday, is set in the Pacific Northwest.
I don't know if I caught that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you look really closely, you can see sometimes Washington plates.
What?
Which is kind of neat. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's kind of cool on that one.
$10 says he's in Yelm.
And then also, I mean, even like, I mean, Stumptown was based out of Portland in
right.
that area. But we haven't really gotten some major like an MCU mm-hmm. type of show or even, you know, MCU adjacent at this point. Because like with Sony films, I don't know what the hell they are at this point.
Right. I mean, technically Venom was in California, but we need Pacific Northwest
yeah.
representation.
Mm-hmm.
But she did have a neuromuscular disease that left her paralyzed and blind. And she ended up having the psychic powers, like Rev was saying. So she's able to kind of like see beyond her capability of her physical body.
Which, I mean, that's kind of a sort of thing that goes around with any of the superhero slash villain mm-hmm. slash whatever anti-hero type. Like, she looks super menacing. And it might just be yes. the fact that she's a spider or she's Madame Web and, you know, it's just right. a spider-ish. She's not an actual spider.
Well, they said that, like, she gets her name because she has this weird, like, web-like life support machine that she's hooked up to. So it looks like a giant spider web. They also say that she has other ties in the Spider-Man universe. She is the grandmother of Charlotte Witter, who becomes a villain version of Spider-Woman. And she's also tied to Julia Carpenter, a second version of Spider-Woman that served on the Avengers. And when Cassandra was mortally wounded, she transferred all her excuse me, psychic ability is to Julia, making her the younger woman into the second Madame Web. Oh. So it's kind of like, what's going on here? We do know that S.J. Clarkson from Jessica Jones is on board to direct Madame Web, from a screenplay from Matt Sazama and Burke Shapless, which also have credits with Morbius and Lost in Space. At one point, Sandra Bullock was rumored to be under consideration for that part, but obviously not.
Oh, and this is going to be another Sony spinoff too. Yep. So like Morbius has been, and like Venom.
But
like,
because the multiverse is open and we, you know, spoiler alert, Venom is kind of...
He's kind of now
tipped in into the MCU.
Not Tom Hardy's version, but if you did see Spider-Man No Way Home, you got to see him at the very end. He was in the MCU for a hot minute, got blinked back, but a little itty bit of the symbiote ended still in the MCU timeline.
Right.
So there's still the potential of having a Venom out there. We just don't know who it would be.
If there is another Venom movie, because the whole point, again, if you haven't seen Spider-Man No Way Home, spoiler.
Well, it's been a while, so.
Right, I know. I'm just trying to prevent the haters as much as I can.
Fair enough.
They say that anybody who knew Peter Parker ended up there. So he knows a Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And he was a reporter. It makes sense that a reporter would maybe know about another reporter. So I'm wondering what version of Peter Parker could it... It obviously isn't Tobey Maguire's.
Yeah.
Because we already saw their own Venom and all that stuff going on there.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it could be...
Because it was Topher Grace in that one.
In theory, it could be Andrew Garfield. Or it could be a completely different one.
And I know that there has been a huge amount of push to have Andrew Garfield reprise and make an Amazing Spider-Man 3, just because of they gave him a redeeming factor in No Way Home. Joe's giving this the no signal on this one. Apparently, he's not down with that. Andrew Garfield.
Here's the thing, though, with Andrew Garfield's second Spider-Man movie, this was literally right before Sony was like, okay, you know what, Marvel, you can borrow Spider-Man. They literally only made these movies with Andrew Garfield to keep the rights to Spider-Man. So they're like, we need to make another Spider-Man movie, otherwise we lose it. And after that Abomination, they were just like, we need to just keep shoveling them out.
No, Abomination's in a different show.
Calm down. That's when they decided, okay, I guess we'll let Disney, you know, they have the Midas touch. We'll let them, you know, have, you know, you can borrow Spider-Man. You can make your Tom Holland Spider-Man with Captain America Civil War, I guess. And then
boom, it was the best thing ever.
Bajillions of dollars.
Yeah. And I mean, just seeing how this will work, Madame Web with Morbius and like all of these different characters that like are absolutely like tied in with Spider-Man, yet they're doing all these things without it. It's interesting because they're like, well, we understand that we're kind of not great with Spider-Man, but we should probably bring in Spider-Man at some point, I feel.
Right? Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about the villains and characters and stuff, and it kind of reminded me of this article I saw from comicbookresources.com. It says 5 MCU villain actors who nailed the roles and 5 who fell short.
Well, nailing the roles. Oh, you said MCU?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was going to say Willem Dafoe. Does he count as MCU now?
Technically.
Because of Spider-Man No Way Home.
I would count him, but I will say he is not on this list.
Yeah, I kind of figured he wouldn't be on this list. All right, so give us, okay, wait, well, so MCU and its villains.
Yes.
Do they have Thanos in it?
They do.
Thank you.
But is he good or is he bad?
He better be good.
Yes, nailed the role. Josh Brolin's Thanos is amazing.
You were going to break my heart with that one.
Well, because what they did is like they show you a bad one and then a bad one and the good one. So
okay.
It's listed. Well, for the number 10, and I think he's one of my now personal favorites, somebody that I hated at first and now I just adore.
Okay.
And that is Zemo. It's Daniel Brawl's Zemo.
And they give him good, right?
Yes.
Okay, good.
He nailed this role.
I thought he was very good at it. I mean, mm-hmm. it was one of those ones where he didn't really get a chance to shine in the movies, but the fact that he got Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and he made him a great character. And
I didn't hate his acting when I first saw him. It was I hated the character.
Yes.
Because he was a piece of crap. But he, and what they said, he is charming, he's magnetic, yeah, and he's a villain, but you love him.
Yes.
In a weird way.
You're out of line, but you're right.
Do you agree, Joe? Or you're like, should he be higher? Should he be lower? Should he not be on this list?
No, I thought he was very good. I think actually he's one of the few characters I liked in Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier, sir. But Captain America.
Yeah, technically.
I never know what the real. I don't know.
Right. Captain Falcon and the Winter, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Fell Short is one that we. This movie could have been better in general, but it wasn't bad. It's from Ant-Man, Yellow Jacket. It's just like, eh.
It was just another version of Ant-Man. It was another insect baddie that fell into that trap of being the opposite of what they wanted. I do like the fact that in like the What If series, Hank Pym, when he went nuts, he was wearing the Yellow Jacket armor, which apparently in comics, usually when he went bad and was kind of going a little crazy, he would don that costume
that
and run
sense.
With that. So I felt that was kind of cool in comics, and it was a good nod to that. But again, the guy was like throwaway. I don't even know who the character was that ended up donning the Yellow Jacket armor because, frankly, I just didn't care. And I mean, I wasn't even really that invested in Ant-Man anyway. I did like it for the comedic elements. I liked Luis Pena and then Michael Pena, sorry. Mm-hmm. And then also who played Luis. And then also obviously Paul Rudd because he's amazing.
He was a great addition definitely to the Avengers. Another one that nailed the role, Tom Hiddleston's Loki.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few people that says this character has grown a lot. Some people think he's overstayed his welcome, but I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I think I'm fine with him.
He's definitely had a really good character arc.
Mm-hmm.
Fell Short, definitely Guy Pearce's Aldrich Killian in the least memorable part of Iron Man 3. I forget he's a thing.
Yeah, he was a thing and great. I mean, he got all angry and like all extremist at the end, so that was kind of neat.
Such a boring storyline.
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, it really wasn't the greatest storyline.
I've cured myself of all my problems, but now I still hate you.
Okay.
Have you considered therapy?
No.
You consider using your billions of dollars to do anything else besides get revenge?
You know, Leonardo DiCaprio didn't win an Oscar for a very long time, but he still had a lot of supermodels. You could have just gone that route. You didn't get exactly what you wanted.
Well,
but you
can't
had supermodels.
What you want.
Right. We did say Thanos already. Mm-hmm. This one I don't know if I agree with.
Okay.
They say that Lee Pace's Ronan the Accuser fell short.
It did because it really wasn't like the fact that when you see Thanos and Guardians and you just see him kind of like take down Ronan, be like, you're a bitch. And he's like, meh.
That's what I loved about it because he looked so badass and menacing and it made me feel like I was really in that world. Because anytime you see an alien, you think they're all powerful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, they can be dumbasses like we can. Yeah, so that's what made me feel better.
He just turned into this weird Michael Scott, like, middle manager type. And it's just like, the fact that you lose to a dance-off, like, I'm out.
That's why I'm sorry, you lose.
You just lose.
I'm not saying that Ronan as a conqueror, what is it, the accuser and being like a badass. He wasn't because he was a dumbass. But I think Lee Pace did a really good job.
Yeah.
And I feel like it worked for the movie. It didn't bring the movie down to me.
Yeah.
Number four, nailed it as their role, Michael Keaton's Vulture.
Yeah. Kind of an old dude, an old construction dude that kind of just comes across this stuff and he gets screwed. Like, you feel for him.
He's very relatable, just like somebody else on this list.
Oh, yeah.
This is the reason why I thought about it, because, like, the Vulture being in, like, Morbius.
Yeah, like, how is everything, like, connecting? Yeah.
This one fell short because the whole movie fell short. Was Christopher Eccleston's performance as Malekith, or I forget his name.
Oh yeah, Malekith, the dark elf.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was just because it was Thor 2. Like, The Dark World was just not a great movie, and it is literally like at, if not the bottom, near the bottom for all of the Marvel movies for me. And so it's just forgettable. I forget that he was in it.
Mm-hmm. I still haven't watched the whole movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not missing anything.
I just can't. It's just
nothing. Point.
There is no point.
Yeah.
The one who definitely nailed the role kind of hinted to it, Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger. And I'm very upset that he won't be in anymore. I mean, I guess he'll be in like What Ifs if they continue.
Yeah, maybe they can figure something out with that.
I mean, we got multiple.
Yeah, right. He can be Black Panther. Just come back. Come on, man. Come on.
And the number one though that they said that fell short was James Spader's
Ultron. Yeah, and it's just because they did Ultron weird. And seriously, like at this point, Joss Whedon kind of ruined that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a good movie at any aspect. And, you know, it was just...
I heard that there was...
It's not his fault, really.
I heard there's like a temper tantrum because I think he had already done stuff with the Justice League and that didn't get received well or something like that. And so this whole movie just kind of fell short because he was being a baby.
Yeah, well, now we found out that Joss Whedon's kind of a piece of crap. So, you know what? We don't have to go back and watch that Avengers movie. I'm fine with not.
I actually have a fun little quip about him, but I'll tell you maybe on the next one.
All right, then.
Until next time, guys, stay nerdy.